We're going to continue now with another book, back to Aina Nilana. Now, Aina, you have been reviewing a book which is all about beekeeping in Ireland and folklore about Irish bees.
Yes, Derek, I have. The book is called Bees and Beekeeping in Irish Folklore, written by Emer Cuivánach. And I began by asking her where she found her interest in bees and their folklore in the first place.
I suppose I found out about the folklore of bees and beekeeping from a number of different areas, but primarily my dad is a beekeeper and he's now 85 years old and he's been keeping bees for 70 of his 85 years. So myself and my three sisters, we grew up in a beekeeping household. So I very much grew up attuned to the beekeeping calendar. So summer months when Dad would be very busy, he'd be nonstop out in the garden doing the beekeeping, and in each of the apiaries, whether he was in Dundrum or Kilgobbin or Wexford, where he's originally from. So I suppose I have an understanding of beekeeping, having lived in a beekeeping household. But it was when I studied Irish folklore as an undergraduate and a postgraduate in UCD. And in third year in UCD, I had to submit an essay. We could choose whatever folkloric topic we wanted to choose. And I decided to see if there was any folklore about bees and beekeeping, just because I myself was familiar with the topic. And I went down to the archive in the Department of Irish Folklore, now the National Folklore Commission. And I was delighted to see a little chunk of index cards that were just devoted to the folklore of bees, beekeeping, folklore about honey, wax. And then I just, I suppose, uncovered lots of extra folklore that I just didn't even know existed. And so much so that I decided to go back to college and do a 2-year MLit that was solely focused on the folklore of beekeeping in the Irish folklore tradition. But I kind of looked at other folk traditions globally just to, for a kind of comparative purposes. So that was nearly 20 years ago. And I suppose the love of the bees and the love of Irish folklore has never really left me. And that has culminated in what you see in front of you now, the book, The Keeper of the Bees, Bees and Beekeeping in Irish Folklore. So I was kind of lucky during my thesis days, and just because I've kept my love of folklore all throughout the decades, I have collected folklore myself from beekeepers across Ireland, as well as using the manuscript collections that are in the National Folklore Commission. So that combined with kind of interviewing my dad, because unbeknownst to him, he had lots of folklore traditions and memories that he had picked up as a child growing up in Ballindagan in County Wexford. And his father, my grandfather, was also a beekeeper. So like folklore, when it passes from one generation to the next, so too do customs and habits and sayings and memories. And so I've put all of that together into the book, The Keeper of the Bees.
Well, come here to me now. Bees are native to Ireland, and we have our own native black bee, which is well adapted to living here in Ireland. And yet tradition has it that a 6th century monk brought bees to Ireland, and that's where they came from in the first place. Could you elaborate on this, please?
Yes. It's a lovely folk tale that tells of a monk, as you say, Aina, by the name of Madominic. And he was originally from Ossory, and Madominic studied in a monastery over in Wales that was governed by St. David. And when Madominic was in his monastery, he was first kind of put to work on a building project, and he just didn't get on well with the other workers. And St. David said, well, why don't you try your hand at the beekeeping? So Madominic started developing the apiary for the monastery, which would have been very customary within monasteries in the 5th and 6th century. And then over the years, Madominic just developed this lovely relationship with the bees, as often occurs between the keeper and the bees. So Madominic anyway spent a good few years taking care of the hives and, you know, cultivating honey. And then towards his latter years, he said, I think I'll go back to Ireland now to retire. So he left the monastery. He was very saddened, but of course he had to leave the bees behind him as well. And so he made his way down to a harbour to get the boat back to Ireland. And what happened was that the bees followed Madomnick overhead. So they followed him like a little speckled cloud over his head, followed him down to the harbour because they just didn't want to let him go. So Madomnick brought the bees back to St. David and brought them back to the monastery and made his way down to the harbour a second time and a third time. And the bees followed him on both occasions. And on the third time, St. David said, listen, just take the bees with you. And so St. David blessed the bees to flourish in Ireland. And that's how they say bees came to Ireland for the first time.
And indeed, there are a whole lot of bee law written into the Brehon laws from the 7th century. And there's all kinds of rules and regulations. I mean, tell me what happens if a beehive was stolen, or what would happen if a passerby was stung by your bee?
Yeah, the bee laws or the Bach Breith are brilliant. They were kind of a subset of the Breton laws written in and around the 7th century. And what the Bach Breith do and accomplished at the time was, well, they worked very hard to, I suppose, delineate the right, the ownership of bees, you know. So as we all know, during the summer months, swarming often happens. Swarming is when one little section of the hive will leave the box hive and fly off, like they followed Madomnick down to the harbour. They will fly off and maybe alight on a branch of a tree or the eave of a house. And what the Bach Breith had tried to do was delineate who the rightful owner was of that swarm. So it had left its original habitat of the hive and had gone, let's say, into somebody else's garden. And so what the Bach Breith had tried to do is say, OK, if the swarm lands in someone else's garden, maybe we need to give some of the honey that's taken from that hive and give it back to the original owner. And so that's what they did. They said that 1/3 of the honey that was taken from the swarm should be shared with the clan or with the neighbour. And similarly, there were other penalties. If somebody was stung by somebody else's bee, that they would be punished in some way. The one thing that is very difficult, I suppose, is putting a law on something in nature, you know. And what I find really interesting about the bee laws or the Bach Breith was that it's nearly like lots of folklore derived from this curious obsession of finding out who the rightful ownership of a swarm was. So I think there's lots of folklore and customs that have been associated with swarms on the back of the bee laws. So, for example, if a swarm alights in your garden, in folklore, it's supposed to be a sign of good luck. However, if you take a swarm that's not rightfully yours, in folklore, that's to bring you bad luck. So I think the Bach Breith actually were what inspired lots of really interesting law that appeared on the back of those laws that were written in the 7th century.
But in spite of the fact that it was St. Madomnick who brought the bees to Ireland, it's actually St. Cubnet of Ballyvourney who's our patron saint of bees. There's a lovely stained glass window to her by Harry Clark in the Honan Chapel in UCC. Now, what did she do to be our patron saint of bees?
Yeah, it's a very good question, Aina. There's a few theories, I suppose, why she might have been crowned the patron saint of the bees. And one of the reasons is we feel like that she was often compared to a queen bee herself. She derives from the 6th century, and there's very little we know in historical records about St. Cubnet. Most of what we know about the patron saint of the bees has actually been transferred and learned via folklore. And what we do learn from the manuscripts and from lots of people who still celebrate the patron saint to this day on the 11th of February every year is that she was a fierce warrior. She was pious, but she was a good fighter and, very importantly, a protector of her people. And what she uses to protect her people are her bees. So lovely folk tales describe St. Cubnet either transforming her bees into soldiers Or using skepsa bees, you know, a skep is an old kind of straw hive that was stitched together with rush, but that she would use her skepsa bees in combat. And so we see that beautiful relationship between the saint and the bees, similar to what we see between Bridget and the animal kingdom in folklore. That beautiful relationship where she's kind of supported and works alongside her bees. So there's lots of stories of her protecting her people and herself metamorphizing into deer for her own protection, because she's also associated with deer in folklore.
Now, honey was really important in ancient Ireland because there was no other sweetener, there was no sugar. Drink was made from it, indeed. We drank mead, and we still do. But it also had healing properties. Now, you could imagine that it might work for a sore throat or colds or flu or that sort of thing, fair enough. But a cure for baldness, surely not.
It's one of my favourite cures that describes honey helping those who are follically challenged. And there's one folklore recipe that recommends that you should get honey. And if you smear it on your head day and night, it'll help hair growth. But better still, if you get the honey and you mix it in with some dead bees and some grubs from the beehive, that will also help those who want to grow a full head of hair. But there's lots of great cures associated with honey, and I think lots that we use on a day-to-day basis still. You know, honey is one of those first places you go to if you've got a cold or you've got a flu. And it is coming from what we know about honey, you know, that it is packed with vitamins and minerals and amino acids, and it's highly nutritious, but it's also a natural antiseptic. So within folk cures, you do see honey being used for burns, for eczema, for skin problems, for dryness, but for whooping cough. So there's a whole myriad of cures that are associated with honey. And it does derive from the fact that it is a natural antiseptic in itself.
And finally, you actually shouldn't pay hard cash for bees. It'll bring bad luck. Tell me more about that. How do you acquire bees if you don't pay money for them?
There's lots of, you know, luck and misfortune that's associated with the bees. And one of the customs is that you should never, as you say, pay, should I say, base cash for the bees. And it's nearly kind of thought that they are that noble or gentle that, you know, that they're deemed nearly superior than legal tender. So in folklore, bees should come to you rather than you going out and purchasing bees. But in Wexford, where my dad is from, there is a Wexford notion that it's okay to pay for bees as long as it's on the back of some very hard work and labour. And in the UK, they would say that bartering is kind of more accepted for bees. So you should, again, not pay cash, but if you swap the bees for, say, gold back in the medieval times or hay, that was a more acceptable way of obtaining or acquiring a hive.
So buying bees with your lotto winnings would be very bad luck, because the lotto winnings came easy. They weren't on the back of very hard work.
Well said. Yes, exactly. That anything that comes easy, yeah, the bees are superior to that. So yeah, they should come to you and luck comes with it.
Well, it's a great read, Emer. It's called The Keeper of the Bees, Bees and Beekeeping in Irish Folklore. It's published by O'Brien Press, and it would do well in Christmas stockings this Christmas. I wish you great luck with it now.
Thanks so much, Aina. It was lovely talking to you.
That's pretty much all we have time for tonight. Don't forget, you can visit the website anytime you like, rte.ie/Mooney. Until next week, Aina and Ireland, Richard and Terry.
Bye.
Email mooney@rte.ie.